Welcome back to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. I am your host, Toby Daniels. This week's episode, we have another conversation that was recorded live during our Social Media Week Los Angeles event and features the incredible Andy King. Now, you might recognize the name as Andy has become an internet celebrity thanks to his infamous appearance on Netflix's Fyre Festival documentary, Fyre, the greatest party that never happened. Following the Netflix documentary, Andy found himself in the middle of a social media blitz, which quickly turned him into a meme overnight, something that was completely foreign to Andy because, at the time, he didn't even know what a meme was. It was such a pleasure getting to know Andy. He's an absolute gentleman and has worked tirelessly since the Fyre fiasco to raise money for those impacted by what has happened and is working really hard to turn his current internet celebrity and fame into something that will hopefully impact the world in positive ways. During our on-stage fireside conversation, we talked about his career before Fyre Festival and how he got involved with the organizers, how he's embraced becoming an overnight viral celebrity, what his impression of the influencer space is today and how it's changing culture, and how he's using his newfound celebrity for good. I had a blast speaking to Andy, and I know you will enjoy the conversation. You can watch Andy's session and 50 more from Social Media Week Los Angeles 2019 by joining SMW Insider. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcasting app. And I hope, as always, you enjoy the conversation. What's up? Give it up for Andy King. I have the best job. I really do. I love this. I love speaking to Andy. Andy really is just such a wonderful human being, so we're very lucky to have him here today. His schedule literally is bananas. And we'll get into some of the reasons why, but Andy, thank you so much for being here and for taking the time out to join us this morning. So before we get into it, you probably don't feel like you need it, but I actually want to play a video to provide a little bit of context to this conversation. So just bear with us for a couple.
How far would you go for your company? It's a question I ask myself every day. After falling in love with aviation gin, I didn't just buy another bottle. I bought the whole company. When aviation became the fastest growing gin in the world, I didn't pat myself on the back or take the day off. I started working even harder. That's why, when aviation recently suggested making a signature bottle, I committed to blowing every single bottle personally, and then engraving them by hand. Because can you ever really go too far for your company? I just don't think it's possible. The Ryan Reynolds signature bottle.
He gets it. I'll have an aviation gin.
Aviation. How far will you go?
That's how you capitalize on a moment. So let me ask you a really serious question, Andy. How does one go from being the mouthpiece for Evian water to the brand ambassador for aviation gin?
Well, as Vanity Fair said last week, Andy King, welcome to Hollywood. Like, oh boy. It's been quite a journey. It's been quite a journey.
It certainly has. And it's a journey that we're going to spend some time talking about, because I think your story is a fascinating one. And you know, most of us, I'm sure, if not everybody here, has seen the documentary. But what's really interesting to me is obviously what's happened since Fyre Festival, since the documentary, and then what you've really done to capitalize on the opportunity. And that's what we're going to spend a lot of time talking about today. And I know that the spotlight wasn't necessarily something that you were seeking out, but I do think it's important to reference some of the ways in which you have used that, not just to benefit your own brand and organization, but the ways in which you're using the spotlight to create impact and to create some good in the world. And that's where I want to kind of start the conversation. Just touch on and spend a little bit of time talking about the impact that you are trying to have right now.
I think to start, as you know, Toby, I agreed and got the team together, agreed to do the documentary with a goal to try to pay back as many people in the Bahamas as possible. And we've been very successful with that so far. As many of you know, Marianne, who supplied all the food for us, we owed $120,000 to, I think she's now at $280,000. There are about 400 employees that we're slowly but surely trying to pay back. We probably have about $125,000 right there. Ryan Reynolds is very sweet and is sending a check for $25,000 to the Bahamians for my participation in the commercial, which is pretty cool. So using that as a platform to at least make good in the Bahamas, I think, was the main goal. But now, as it turns out, I'm speaking all around the world. Last week, I was in Moscow to Lithuania, through Copenhagen and home. At the end of the day, my goal is to drive positive change, and that I have this platform now, and that, I have to say to people, why do you think I have this platform? And they'll say, but Andy, you were really sort of one of the most positive people, but also the only adult in the room, and that for the Gen Zs, the Gen Xs, and the Millennials, they look up to you, and that with our crazy political situation today, I think that they're looking for someone that is genuine, that is honest, and that they can trust, and it's kind of scary because suddenly, I've been put on this platform, and it's a lot of responsibility, but the irony, of course, is that I was never a big social media person, and as you all know, I mean, social media is what built FIRE, and then the fucking cheese sandwich went viral, and that's what brought FIRE down.
I want to come back to the cheese sandwich in just a second. If you want to really know what exemplifies our theme, stories with great influence comes great responsibility, it's Andy King and Andy King's story. Because of course, the path you could have gone down in capitalizing on the spotlight, on your newfound fame, could have been very much about sort of a for-profit kind of, how do I make money from this opportunity? And just the example I think of Ryan Reynolds writing a $25,000 check because you participated in a commercial, you didn't necessarily have to do that. And I think that's just a great example of how when you recognize and understand that you have influence in the world, that the next and most important thing is to also recognize that you have a responsibility. And I think that's hugely important. But that's not necessarily an overnight decision that you made. This has been a hallmark, I think, of your career over decades of working in sort of the event and in the production world. And a lot of people don't really sort of know much about the Andy King sort of pre-Fire Festival. So I want to spend a couple minutes just talking about that. So give us your background. Up until 2017, what was Andy King working on?
I've been running an event planning business in New York City for 25 years, predominantly focusing on Wall Street. And so the Wolf of Wall Street would have been a good example of my heyday, complete waste, but these wild, wild parties. 6 years ago, we partnered with Bard College, and we had a group of MBA students getting their MBAs in sustainability who wrote a business plan for me. I participated in the big climate march in New York City years ago, where Beyonce performed in Central Park, and millions of people flew in from around the world to help with climate change. And I went through the Central Park right after Beyonce's concert, and you have never seen so many plastic water bottles and Solo cups on the ground. And from that point on, I said, you know what, I'm going to turn my business into a zero-waste event business. And of course, that's the irony, is that I was going to suck the biggest dick in the Bahamas for 250,000 plastic Evian bottles. And we don't allow plastic at any of our events, but of course, that deal had been cut before I arrived on the island.
Some might call that a turning point.
Just a big turning point. So it's been amazing. And so this past year, for instance, we hosted a dinner for Leonardo DiCaprio here in California, and we raised over $8 million. It was a 99.9% zero waste event, you know. And how do you do something like that? Well, we partnered with a third generation ceramicist who made all the pottery for the 500 guests for the five courses. $50,000 worth of pottery was donated to families who in California who'd lost their homes in the fires last year. There's so many initiatives that we focus on. And of course, I think it's pretty funny that fire was the opposite. Now, Evian has reached out and has sent us some beautiful glass water bottles now and said that I have more in common with them than they know. But so now it's focusing on the peace with positive change, and now with my new power and fame, we are really striving to kind of change the trajectory of the event world by making large events like this and other events, you know, as close to zero waste as possible, and to highlight incredible young people like you all that are doing amazing things around the world.
So let's talk about how you got there, how you got to this kind of point where you now have infamy and fame and followers. And again, I don't want to labor it and spend too much time, but let's just talk about fire just for a second. So how did you meet Billy?
So Billy had a company called Magnesis, which was a black credit card company for 20-somethings, where we were trying to create community for young kids coming out of school and getting jobs in New York. And I helped him grow the business. I grew up in a neighboring town and knew Billy's parents. And I helped him grow the company from 300 members to 15,000. One of the big things was that Billy called me, and we were hosting the World Cup Pro-Am Ski Championships in Squaw Valley, and said, you know, he was hosting a music festival and having a couple issues, and wanted to know if I'd fly in and kind of look at the situation. He also informed me that Magnesis was being sold, and I was, as a stockholder, about to be handed a fairly large check, which was quite nice. What he didn't tell me was that, of course, the buyers were going to sign the deal at the festival, which never happened, obviously, so no money came through.
So you inadvertently invested your stock in the Fire Festival.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Just another little piece of the story.
Indeed. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, so he's obviously a very persuasive individual, very charismatic, borderline sociopath. Well, actually, probably he's just a sociopath. he convinces you to come on board. You look at the situation. What did the situation actually look like at the time?
I mean, I arrived 6 weeks out, and if you can imagine, if I called any of you in any major city and said, can you help me with a music festival, you've got 6 weeks, and you'd say I was out of my mind. Now try to do that on a small island in the Bahamas with no infrastructure. So I did look at the situation, and I just said, listen, you just have to change the messaging immediately. These people are not staying in luxury accommodations. There will be very few yachts. They're going to come down here, hang out in their bathing suits, hear great music, eat fish tacos, and drink a lot of tequila for $1,200 for 3 days. It's going to be a lot of fun. The messaging got changed about 10 hours before the first guests arrived. So I didn't win on that one. But, you know, and so we worked tirelessly day and night. That was the amazing thing, is that the world, you know, thought it was a scam. You know, it was never a scam. You've never seen a group of people working so hard trying to make something happen. And I think that the big motivating factor for me, and people keep saying, why? What kept you going? You know, and I always refer to Woodstock, and you know, Woodstock's the most famous, successful music festival in the world. No one talks about the 1,000 cars piled up on the highway. No one talks about the drug overdoses. No one talks about no water. Mm. No one talks about, you know, a few murders and a few different deaths. No one, and I kept thinking, if fucking Woodstock goes down in history as the best music festival in the world, then fire could make it.
Yeah.
Well, we were close.
It still could.
Yeah, still could.
It's interesting. I just rewatched the Theranos documentary, and you know, speaking of sociopaths, and I was rewatching that. But what was really interesting was one aspect of the documentary, which is about why do these people continue to lie or to continue to believe that it's possible to pull off whatever it is that they're trying to do? And oftentimes it's because they believe that they are working on something, working towards something that is somehow contributing to the greater good. And you can almost make any excuse. As long as you're working towards the greater good, you can make any excuse along the way as to, you know, why it's going to be possible and why it's going to happen and why we're going to achieve something so extraordinary. Was that a factor, do you think, particularly in regards to kind of like your conversations with Billy?
The greater good with Billy, I don't know. It was definitely me and most of my team. I think Billy was in so deep with investors that there was no turning back, which we really didn't understand that when we were in the thick of things. Mm-hmm. Billy wanted to bring great things to these kids. I know he did. But as a sociopath, you know, you become invincible. Like, right. Nothing can go wrong. And if you can imagine now, Billy's in prison with two roommates, Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, and Situation from the Jersey Shore. You can't make it up. I mean, and these three will come out and rule the world. I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's unbelievable. Right. But we did focus on greater good. I mean, every day, from making all the tables out of reclaimed wood we found on the beaches to working with all the locals on all these different kinds of things. I mean, that was, but not really Billy's world.
I just would love to be a fly on the wall of that prison cell listening to those conversations. That's amazing. Okay, let's fast forward. So, shit goes down. You go into hiding. There's a period of time, one assumes, where you're beginning to reflect on what just happened. What was going through your mind then, and what were you thinking was going to happen next?
Let's see. Well, I feel, as many of you know, I mean, I fled the Bahamas. I laid down in the back of a pickup truck with palm fronds over me, parked in the woods next to the airport for 4 hours. The jet that we hired finally came to pick me up as the sun went down, and then we screeched out on the runway, and I had two security guards with me, and I jumped in the back of the plane, screamed at the pilot to go. It was like a movie, and it was a movie, yeah. Anyway. And that, you know, I finally felt safety when I felt the wheels come off the ground. And I said to the pilot, where are we headed? And they said, we're heading to Miami. And I said, oh, no. We got to change this flight plan. Everybody in the Bahamas knows everybody in Miami. I will be killed the second I hit the ground. I arrived back in New York. The FBI followed me for 5 days. I got a call from a big client who said, listen, and my business partner and my lawyer, and they're like, you probably would be a good idea if you left the country for a little while. I'm like, oh my God, is it that bad? I went to Switzerland for 4 weeks, and I hosted a major event in Geneva. The night before the event, I took the entire staff out for a big meal, 40 employees, and one of the girls that was working for a client who wasn't very bright stood up and asked if I would tell a fire story. Nobody knew that I was involved with fire at that point. So, of course, I told the story. The next day, this $20 million event that I was hosting started to fall apart all around me because, of course, part of the people that heard that I was involved with fire decided that any recommendation that I'd made for this big event was going to be a poor recommendation, and so they started dismantling everything around me. I was able to fix all that. I boarded a plane to go to Bermuda because I was hosting the opening ceremonies for the America's Cup. I landed in Bermuda, and my business partner was texting, call us immediately, and so I called, and then he said, hold on a minute, and then I hear, hi, Andy, it's Jessica, my lawyer, and they explained that they'd had a debrief conversation with this big client in Switzerland, and that apparently I told a fire story, and that everything had gone awry, and that they just didn't trust me. So they said, Andy, will you promise never to mention fire again to anybody, ever? Like, yeah, right.
So,
and I said, yeah, whatever, I'll never mention it again. And then 1 week later, I woke up and I said, you can fuck yourselves. You know what? I went through murder with fire. And you know what? I am never going to be embarrassed, ever. And now I'm like the biggest failure in pop culture today with the most power. I'm like, how did this happen? But you know what? I'm honest. I worked really hard. And guess what? People fail every once in a while.
It's an amazing lesson of overcoming adversity. It really is, and I love just how much like positivity you do bring to the opportunity to share the story. But obviously, you know, the next thing that happens after you promise and never talk about Fire Festival is that Netflix approaches you and says, "Hey, we're making a documentary, and we want you to be like featured in this documentary and like talk about and share the Fire Festival story." So, what went through your mind at the point at which you were approached by Netflix, and what were you thinking was going to be like the potential outcome of this film?
Well, first of all, as you know, in history, people don't watch documentaries and they don't make any money. Over, 22 million people streamed the documentary in the first 30 days. So it's over 50 million so far. So it's the most widely watched documentary in history. Then I felt, because I'm so naive, you know, the Netflix crew came to my house and said, can we just do the interview? And I said, yeah, well, let's not do it in the house. Why don't we do it in my barn, you know? So we go out in the barn, and then, I don't know, I have a drink every once in a while, so I'm sure I had a drink. And then the director couldn't have been nicer, so I'm like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, let me tell you a little story on the side. I know you'll never use it, but, you know. And I honestly thought they would never use it. So then, next day, I'm in the city, and I say to my business partner, well, I did tell the blowjob story. He's like, you didn't tell the blowjob story. I'm like, no, I did. And he's like, they have to pull it. They got to pull it immediately. So, of course, call the team, and I said, you know, we have to pull that piece. So, like, Andy, you don't understand. Like, this documentary is totally intense. And then your piece comes. It was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then you go back to the intensity. That was not a penis. That was just like a, I'm like... And I just said, you're not going to pull, no, we can't pull it. And who would have thought? And it wasn't until the screening in New York City with 1,000 people, where I arrived and in January, and everybody that was involved with the documentary, I'm like, oh my God, hi, hi, hi. They're all wearing sunglasses, baseball caps and hoodies. They're in the back. They're hiding. I'm in like a pink sweater. I've got like 12 people with me. I'm right in the middle of the orchestra, you know, and... My scene, the big scene, comes up, and I'm just shrinking down my chair, going, oh, no. And all of a sudden, 1,000 people jumped to their feet and gave me a standing ovation. And so it wasn't until that point that I really didn't realize until then that my life would change overnight. It's pretty amazing.
Every time you tell that story, I think you're, like, adding in more innuendo. Seriously.
Well, it's about storytelling.
No, of course not. It was true.
We interrupt this week's episode of Leads to Scale to share an update in regards to our forthcoming conference in London, the 10th annual edition of Social Media Week London, Europe's premier conference for media and marketing professionals, is taking place at the QE2 Conference Center in Westminster between October 31st and November 1st. This year's event will continue the 2019 global theme Stories with Great Influence Comes Great Responsibility, a conversation that will explore how social media has become the most influential story platform in the world that has the power to both unite and divide us. Check out our first wave of speakers and secure your pass by visiting socialmediaweek.org/London. And don't forget to use the code LEADS2SCALE at the checkout to save an additional 10% off your pass. All right, let's get back to the show.
So, okay, so that happens. Everyone watches it, and then all of a sudden you become like an internet sensation. But an internet sensation who doesn't know necessarily how to use the internet. Walk us through that kind of initial experience, because you know you cautiously begin to build a presence and create profiles, etc. But you don't necessarily know how all of this like stuff works, which must have been like incredibly overwhelming and intimidating, but also perhaps a little bit exciting at the same time. So just share a little bit of that experience, what it was like.
Well, first a friend of mine has texted me and said, "Oh my God." You're a Mimi. And I'm like, I didn't know what a Mimi was. And then I called my head of brand. She's like, it's not a Mimi, Andy. You're a meme. I'm like, what the fuck is a meme? I have no idea. And then it was like, hey, how do you want to pay? Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or Andy King? I'm like, that's a meme? I mean, take one for the team. And then I, you know, now it's like I got a call. And they're like, so Andy, your merchandise in LA right now is the hottest pop-up in years. Like, I'm like, what are you talking? Like, yeah, you're on every sweatshirt, every t-shirt, you're on hats, you're on coffee mugs, it's your take one for the team, you know. I'm like, I had no idea. And then we set up a Instagram account, which I'd never had before. And I post one little picture, you know, all the pipes burst in my house because the heat wasn't working right, and all of a sudden, you know, I get a call, and I'm like, Andy, you got 12,000 likes. I'm like, what? what, you got to be kidding me, I have no idea. And then someone wrote me, Andy, so Zach Braff wants you to be in this movie with him, and he's sent you a DM. And I'm like, is a DM like a downmo? Or I have no idea. We go on, I have 1,900 direct messages, like everybody going, how do I meet you? We represent our product. We, I'm like, this is spun out of control. And here I am today. I don't know.
And here you are today, and you have obviously leaned in and fully embraced the opportunity to be on social, and you know, to use the tool as a way of being able to continue your work, to continue to fix the situation, and to hopefully, you know, create some positive impact in the future. As you've entered into that world, you've also now presumably started to kind of get a sense of like what internet culture is all about. I mean, now that you, at least you know what a meme is, which is great, but you have a sense of what internet culture is about. You have a sense of what the influencer space is, even if you, you know, operate potentially like on the periphery of that. You're meeting these people and you're understanding what it all represents. And so given that, like, what is your impression of like actually what's happening in social media, and in particular what's happening in the influencer world?
It's funny because we talked this morning about influencers, and I feel like if I can help change the trajectory a bit of social media by highlighting incredible young people like you guys as the new influencers, like, what are young cool kids doing today? Like, those are my influencers. Now, I can be the guy that's going to add the wisdom. I can be the adult in the room. I can, you know, give great recommendations of all my experiences. But I feel like at the end of the day, I want to see the influencers continually driving positive change, predominantly through social environmental impact. And, you know, one of the, you know, there's one situation, for instance, is a big YouTube star who's now a good friend of mine, and he, you know, he's probably getting paid to wear certain clothes and hold a certain soda. But what do we describe it as? A wolf in sheep's clothing. So young people today see through that shit so fucking quickly. It's unbelievable. I'm never going to be that guy. But he's wearing a JetBlue hat. And I'm like, why wouldn't you just say, yeah, JetBlue's paying you money? I love JetBlue. You know why I love JetBlue? JetBlue is an employee-owned company. They're doing amazing work. Why do the stewardesses smile and the pilots so nice? Yeah, because they all fucking own the company. And we want to support companies like that, right? So tell people that instead of just wearing the JetBlue hat and everybody's criticizing, you know, on and on. And I really feel like I will work really hard in everything I do and with my power now to align with brands that are doing amazing things. And I think, you know, with Leo's dinner we did, we had Jane Goodall come as a keynote speaker before I had Coldplay perform at dessert. And Jane got up and she just said, you know, if everybody in the world would just do one little thing every day, just one little thing. And I think from an influencer's perspective, if we can start planting those seeds, yeah, I mean, our political situation is a disaster. The climate is a disaster. The planet's falling apart. But if I can help inspire the world a little bit more and highlight, so every day, you know, our job now, I mean, we're about to build a massive social media campaign, and it will be based on my new television show. It'll be based on a potential music festival. It'll be based on a lot of different things. But from a social media perspective, I would love to be able to just continually every day find cool shit that's going on and highlight it.
And I think that's a hugely important message. And again, it kind of like ladders up to our theme, which is that everybody has influence and an opportunity to create content and tell stories that impact the world in really positive ways. It's not about reach. It's not about the size of your audience. It's just about the individual actions that you take. And it's also about the fact that you have to recognize that social media is a tool that you can use to create you know, positive change and to create some good in the world. And I'm so excited that you feel the same, and that's a message that you want to share, you know, with this particular audience. I have a super I'm in a super privileged position in the fact that I get to ask Andy questions, but I really want to give you an opportunity, and I want to have like a bit of an extended Q&A, because I'm sure you're sitting here and you have lots of questions. And I think it could be really fun that we have a sort of a little bit of a dialogue going with the audience as well. So if you have a question for Andy, just put up your hand. We'll find you with a mic, and we'll keep the conversation going. Awesome, we have someone over here. Just say who you are, if you don't mind, and who you're with, and what you're wearing. And
you can make up your name if you want.
My name is Maylee Mason, and I am with Waste Ed. We're also a zero waste company.
Great.
What is some of your favorite zero waste products that you are currently working with?
Nice.
Oh, boy. We focus on a little more of the system and not necessarily just on the products, so to speak. Ecos, Earth-Friendly Products, is a company that I support. They're based here in Cyprus, and I've done several launches for them, and they're predominantly focusing on cleaning products. We hire sorters in every area where we are, and a sorter will help us to try to manage everything from going to landfill the best we can. And so if there are coat hangers on site, and the coat hangers go to a local dry cleaner, and if there are, we're big into composting. Every event that we do, we set up, we will purchase water bottles, and for Leo, it was 400 people on site for 9 days, and everybody got a water bottle with their name on it, and then there's water stations, and we basically say, listen, please do not bring plastic water bottles on site. Sorry. Yep. Products, we'll work with a lot of our big vendors, and I'll say, listen, you're supplying all the rentals. Tell me about your truck fleet. I'm like, well, we got 40 trucks. I said, are any of them electric? Well, two. Well, you might want to use those two for our event because we want to set that example. We got two biodiesel trucks. Perfect. You can do those as well. Tell me about your hiring practices. Oh, well, and we try to find a lot of companies that are women owned and women run.
Diversity is also an important, in addition to sustainability and climate change, diversity is important to you as well.
Yeah.
Why?
And it's funny as we're casting the television show, because I just can't have a lot of cute white people on stage, or on the show. I think it'll lose its. I've always embraced supporting local communities, and I think it's just so important. And I think diversity, we need to, it's all about inclusion and not exclusion, And I think that one of my biggest successes in my career has been always the guy that treats everybody the same. I dated a guy years ago who called me whining, as usual, and he wanted to know when I was coming home. And I said, I'm hosting an event. And I said, the event will go till midnight, and then I'll probably take the staff out for drinks. And he said, you socialize with those people? I said, I am one of those fucking people. I might make $1 million a year. I will give any, I'll get anybody a drink. I mean, I don't have to suck every dick in the room, but I'll do a lot. And I'm the guy who has a mop. Even if I have a car and driver out front, I mop our way out of every big event that we do. And and that from a diversity perspective, I think it's important to set that example of we're all equal, right? We are no better than anybody else. I don't care how much money you make or who you are, we're all the same. I
100% agree, although if my team is in the room, don't get any ideas.
I don't know if I did a good job answering on the product side. I think, look at companies like Patagonia. And so we just did a conference, we're a member of 1% for the Planet. And we just love their practices and we love their products. And they do a lot of focus on, and we'd love to learn more about what you do, for sure.
Awesome.
Your question, I'm wearing an 80s jumpsuit. It's vintage. Thank you.
Good, and my shoes are 25 years old. So listen, we could get together later. Okay.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a question from over here.
Hello.
Who are you?
My name is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
I work with Staff Garden. We are a boutique staffing agency for nurses. However, first I'd like to say you are the standard of friendship for all of us, being able to do everything and anything to make something happen.
Thank you.
And us as marketers, I believe that we have that same attitude and accessibility to our jobs, where we are always trying to work and get things done, even if it's a sacrifice of a work-life balance. So yourself, working all the time, doing whatever it takes to make it happen, is there such thing as a work-life balance? Is that something that we should even really be thinking about? Or do we make the success happen and live life post that?
That's a good question. The irony with this is that my last intersection with fame is I was profiled in the front page of the Wall Street Journal on April Fool's Day. My father thought it was a joke. as America's first corporate concierge. And it's a concept that I developed and I launched at Pepsi. And it was designed to help corporate employees balance their work lives and personal lives so that they were happier at home and more productive at work. So, and it became immensely successful. That was in 1994. That was basically kind of the launch of my event business, because a lot of the Pepsi executives started asking me to host all these events for clients and for others. But the work and family balance is vitally important. And as I'm entering this journey right now, I won't lie, I've been home maybe, you know, probably 12 days and 5 months. We got home on Monday. I have a farm, a 300-acre farm. You know, one of us immediately got out of the tractor. I had the mowers. I was immediately in the gardens because I knew I only had 4 hours before I had to get on a plane again to leave. But I had the things that needed to get done. But those are the things that keep me grounded. And I really feel like I say to kids today, you know, don't go to work for a big company that you hate, and don't go to work in a cubicle. You know, take a risk. You can join a startup, find small companies, follow your heart and your passion. But at the end of the day, it's not about the money. And I had all the money in the world, and I lost a lot of it in 2008. But, you know, you got to just look down every once in a while and go, my feet are on the ground, I'm healthy. You know, how do you be grateful, you know? And I just think it's so important. And I think that if you're able to balance that, you're going to be a lot more productive at work and happier at home. So it's a challenge. It's not easy.
I think the people that struggle with that question the most are the ones that are working for big companies in cubicles and thinking about the kind of like the struggle between, you know, work and life, and how do you strike the right sort of balance. You know, presumably in your position, particularly today, it you know, even work doesn't feel like work.
No, it doesn't feel like work anymore. And now, and as we embark on the television show, my manager basically said, we're going to block out 10 to 12 days a month where no one can touch you, mm-hmm. which is amazing. And I'm like, yeah, because ironically, after fire and a few other situations, I flew to Florida. I was looking at double-wide trailers that were close to the ocean with a dock, and I was thinking about that I was just going to stop doing my marketing in my event world, and I was going to get a job in a bookstore or something. I didn't care. Yeah. And then, of course, now look, like I'm not in a bookstore at all. I'm on every television around the world. But work and family balance is really important, for sure.
All right, let's take another question.
Yes.
In the middle here. Do you have a mic?
You can yell.
No, wait for the mic.
So wait for the mic.
We can get it on the record.
Crawling through.
Hi, okay. Is this on? Hi, my name's Carlisle. I work with a company called Ancient Nutrition. We do whole food supplements. And something that's become really important for me in my career journey and my career path is working with people that I trust and that I know will put respect in me. So after your experience with fire, you know, what's something that we can look for in companies or in leaders or in people that we should be hesitant about before we make a career move or a decision of that nature?
It's funny. In a lot of my speaking these days, I will say to a group of professionals, you know, you have to like own what you do, and you have to be proud of what you do, and that we work really hard. And you know, maybe you've had a job for 1 year or 5 years or 10 years, or you've had a couple different jobs, but that you have to look at it to say, I'm an expert at what I do. And I've been talking to a lot of people today about saying, sometimes you have to fire a client. Like, sometimes you have to fire a company you work for, because you just will get to the point where if you're not aligned and if it's not something that you're comfortable with and that you're not aligned with where this is going, I think you need to be able to stand up for yourself more and more. And I feel like people will respect you a lot more from that scenario. And, you know, it's not easy, right? And I feel like, you know, on a side note of, well, comedic side note, after Fire, of course, was released and breaking every record, Netflix called me and said, Andy, can you get to the studios? We have a problem. And I said, what's going on? They said, well, explain when you get here. And so I arrived at the studios, and they said, the LGBTQ community is really upset with you. And I'm like, well, what did I do? And they said, well, you know, you didn't press charges, sexual harassment charges. And Well, they said, we need to put a few things in the can. So I'm like, I have no media training. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. So of course, I wrap the studios. Cameras hit me, and I say, hi, this is Andy King. If this happens to you in your workplace, it's not okay, and don't tolerate it. And I had to do a series of 9 or 10 commercials. But basically, what I was trying to say was that, you know what, if shit happens like that to you in your workplace, no, it's not okay, and you need to stand up for yourself and say, this may not be the right place for me to work. With a client scenario, I get to a point, because running a zero-waste business, and when a client just keeps pushing me and pushing me, you have to get to a point and go, guess what, we're 2 weeks out. You either back the fuck down, because I am not going to do that. This is going to ruin your brand, and it's also going to ruin mine. And if you don't respect that decision, we can part ways right now. And I think you have to empower yourself to really, you know, follow your heart.
Great answer. Yep, just down here.
Hi. That's loud. My name's Juliet, and I'm here with a digital marketing agency called Social Tribe. And I'm wearing all secondhand clothing, actually. But I'm curious, given the power of social media, what you would say is the best way that brands or influencers or individuals can use their platform to, like, get their followers to actually take action to create a positive impact? Like, do you think it's leading by example? Is it challenging them to take, you know, to make changes in their day-to-day life? What do you think the best way is to go about getting people to make that change?
I mean, inspiring people today is really, really important. And we joked recently because, of course, I can't go to a restaurant very easily anymore. I can't go to a bar. It's kind of hard to walk down the street. I mean, and it's all about selfies and just people wanting to introduce themselves to me. I think meeting, like, one of the world's biggest living memes is something that everybody seems to want to do. I don't know. But we said something recently which we need to start practicing more. And I said, you know what? What if everybody who comes up and says, do you mind, can I have a picture taken? And I'll say, absolutely, not a problem. Will you promise me that you would give $5 to my GoFundMe in the Bahamas to help pay back everybody down there? Who's going to say no, right? Or it's $2, I don't care. But at least if I know that I say, listen, I'm willing to do this for you, would you be willing to do something for good? And I think it'll make them stop and think. And I think that could be sort of a concept to think about, with social media in general, right?
Maybe set it at, like, the cost of a bottle of Evian water.
That could be. How much is a bottle?
I don't think it really matters.
No, exactly. But I think inspiring people, you know, and doing the right thing is probably leading by example. But you know what? We're in a world right now, we have to make our business sexy. And whatever you're doing, if you want people to follow, you got to make it sexy somehow. And if it's somebody who's wearing the item, if it's somebody who's cool, if it's somebody that, you know, will inspire people, that sexy piece, right? I think, Toby, is really, really important.
I have no idea, but yeah, I'd take your word for it. There's a lot of inspiration porn out there. I think what's lacking, or at least has up until this point, is action and impact. So, you know, the important thing is, it's all very well to inspire someone, but it's just as important to actually make the ask. And that's just a great example of making the ask. Get someone to actually do something by asking them to. Yes, down here. It feels like this is a group question. There's a number of people involved in compiling this. Plus, you took notes. That's impressive.
This is the question.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so my name is Sam. I work for a social media marketing company called Studio 3. I'm wearing my mom's vintage outfit.
Very cool.
Well, Sans jacket, but here we go. Fire Festival ran Instagram's ads that were misleading. Is there more responsibility on Instagram's part to vet that, or is that a matter on censorship?
Oh, shit.
That's probably something more you can answer.
It's probably something more, I mean, you can have a stab if you want.
I can touch on just the fact that, and I don't know what I'm allowed to say anymore, but... I love the guys that fuck Jerry, and so it was a challenge for me because I knew nothing about social media, and the orange tile I thought was quite clever, and these beautiful models, and swimming with the pigs, and everybody on the beach was quite clever. They were hired to do a job, and the job was to promote this music festival, and as far as everybody knew, that's what it was going to be. As far as I knew, that's what it was going to be. I mean, not until, obviously when I got there and everything was shit was hitting the fan. It was, but they were paid to do a job. And so they have suffered more than anybody now. There's other situations, but they're stealing comedians' content. And I don't, you know, that's all beyond me. But that was a really clever campaign that they designed. It was amazing. And now, you know, they're paying the price. Censorship or how do you...
Yeah, without going into the specifics, they're definitely paying the price.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And I think there's a combination of, like, factors at play in the policing of this. The community is really important for calling out false advertising or misleading content, and that should happen, and the platforms should create tools to make it really easy for us to be able to do that. Yes, there's a huge responsibility on the platforms themselves, and yes, they should be held accountable. And, you know, of course, they're, you know, most importantly, the responsibility and the buck stops with the people that are creating the content. But it's not, you know, we can't throw Jerry under the bus. You have to look at the kind of the bigger picture and understand everybody that is complicit in putting out content that has misled a very significant number of people and convinced that significant number of people to part ways with their own cash.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take, we got 3 minutes. We've got 1 minute. We've got one more question, sorry. We've got one question that should last 3 minutes. Just speaking to the mic.
Hello, there we go. Okay, hi Andy.
Hi.
My name's Jennifer and I work for a healthcare company. So you can imagine that it has its own struggles, obviously with HIPAA and whatnot. So my question is, with all of the success that FHIR had in getting people to attend, getting people to make purchases for the where they were staying and whatnot, what do you feel was the most successful tool or asset, again, to get people to come?
Well, it was social media, that's for sure. Right. As we just reflected on, you know, it was a brilliant campaign, and I think for Jerry Media, for them, all the content was being shot in the Bahamas, and all the content was happening somewhere else, and delivered to them in their office in New York City for them to create this campaign. So they really were not totally attuned to, you know, but as far as we were all concerned, that's really what was going to happen. I think that social media really is an amazing way to be able to put the messaging out there, for me now, what did I learn on that side? We'll hopefully be making an announcement very soon about my show and about a potential music festival, and the music festival will be in a place that I want to drive awareness that they've experienced tragedies and experienced a lot of difficulty. I want to inspire young kids today to kind of do the right thing, but we also want to highlight incredible young people doing amazing things at this festival. The festival will be zero waste, and it'll be really, and so for me on that question, that's what I'm going to do now to promote this festival. We probably won't have difficulty because of my fame and the fame of FHIR. We will sell out very quickly. It's not going to be a huge festival, but we will really promote all the amazing things that we're going to be doing there, and I think it's a great way for companies to focus on, like, what are you going to do to help create positive change? What are you going to do to help change people's lives in a better way? And I think today, you know, you can get fucked up and take ecstasy and come to my festival and eat hot dogs. I did take ecstasy recently and went to, where'd I go? Ultra. Yeah, that was quite something. But then they all thought I was producing the music festival, and it became a problem, and I didn't want to throw up, and everybody wanted 1,000 pictures taken, but I wanted to experience it the way kids experience it today. And I did, and I even smoked some pot and drank some, too. So it was quite a night, but I survived. We got smuggled out in the back of a bus. But anyway.
I
hope I answered. Sometimes I say too much, as you know.
Well,
at that,
I'm pleased you shared that story, and in a way, it's a pretty good place to wrap up the conversation. I love you, Andy. I love your positivity and how you've really sort of capitalized on this opportunity and the impact that you're having and what you're working on next. And I know this audience has been hugely appreciative of you giving up your time and being so honest and so candid with us today. So please,
well, you give guys, it up. Thank you for being here.
Andy King.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. Leads to Scale is edited and produced by Al Manarino. For the latest news and insights, or to learn more information about how to get involved with future Social Media Week events, please visit socialmediaweek.org.